This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour two, rolling along. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. All right, so our thanks to a Will Gray at golfbet.com to talk about the U.S. Open. So I was reading yesterday at The Athletic about this golf course. They had a really good in-depth piece on the Los Angeles Country Club. And we kind of joked about this yesterday, that there was a real estate guy that said, when asked about the real estate value of the land at the Los Angeles Country Club, because it's right there in Beverly Hills, he said, oh, billions, billions for that golf course. That golf course is on billions of dollars worth of land because it's surrounded by these mansions. The Playboy Mansion bordered the 14th hole. Brooks Koepka actually said that he remembered the Playboy Mansion when he played there in college years and years ago. He said he remembered there. But this article was talking about the history of this club. It's been around for a long, long time, but it's an elite membership. But here's the thing. When I say elite in Los Angeles, you're probably thinking movie stars, movie people, etc. That's not who are the members there. In fact, Bing Crosby, legendary golfer as well as major entertainer and whatnot, bought a house in Beverly Hills. He bought a house next to the golf course thinking that would make him a member. He couldn't be a member. Hugh Hefner tried to be a member, couldn't be a member. Very, very old money, elite membership at that golf course. And they didn't take movie stars, and they didn't take producers and directors. And very, it's like Augusta National, where there isn't just a criteria for you to get in. It does, just because you're famous with money doesn't mean you'll be a member at Augusta. And just because you're famous with money that lives a 9-iron away from the club means you get in. And there were oil money guys that tried to get in. The article was talking about how in the early days it was very anti-Semitic, and of course it was racist. They were only just very white, you know, rich white men that owned the golf, that were members of the golf course, like all a lot of country clubs. But even in its later days, when it finally were allowing women members and allowing minority members, it was still a very, very elite elect group, and it kept them from wanting to participate in any major championship. They didn't want, for decades, they didn't want the course to be seen by the general public. They wanted to keep it very, very private, meaning we don't even want you to know what the 13th hole looks like. That kind of private. They didn't want to be Augusta. Like, Augusta was willing to be like, here's our club, we're very private, but every year you guys could see it in all of its glory and dream about one day playing this golf course someday that you'll never see, but man, oh man, it's great. And here's the golf course, and you can memorize all the holes and know it goes downhill on 6 and what 12 looks like. They didn't want that. No member wanted that. They did not want the media to come in. They didn't want them to know how long the 13th hole was or how tricky the 6th hole was. They had a vote of whether or not they were going to be competing for a U.S. Open in 1986. Shinnecock Hills won it. They said nope. They had no interest in it. Then it started to change, right? They started to go, you know, you get new members. Old ones die out. New members come in. And they sort of changed the thought process. And they said, you know what? Maybe we should get in this. And so they had the Walker Cup in 2017. Max Homa set a course record during a Pac-12 championship that it wanted to host years and years ago. So it started to open itself up a little more. But this course is so private. And here's the one thing. If you're a major golfer, right, if you're a major PGA Tour golfer or even world golfer like Rory McIlroy or somebody like that, one of the joys and perks is you can pretty much play anywhere you want, right? Like, you just make a phone call. No matter how private a golf course is, you can get on, right? I mean, if you're Phil Mickelson and you want to play some private golf course in Malaysia, pick up the phone, they're going to let you play, right? You're Phil Mickelson, for crying out loud. Not the LA Country Club. It's wild. This article was incredible how deep it was. Some guys, big name golfers, never saw this golf course grow. Never saw this golf course in their life. And off weeks, off months, they'll go around and play courses. But until it became a major and then they had access to it in advance practice rounds and whatnot, some of them couldn't get on, no matter how famous and big they were. That's how uber private this golf course is. Now, of course, there are some logistics here. Los Angeles is a very traffic heavy city, and getting thousands of people to this golf course is going to be a real challenge. Getting the players to the golf course for their tee times is going to be a real challenge. You're going to have to get there really early just to make sure you're not stuck in some traffic jam. You're going to need a police escort to get to your tee time like Rory McIlroy did at the Ryder Cup years and years ago. But it's going to be an interesting U.S. Open because, again, there's going to be a level of unfamiliarity to it. I think Will Gray hit it on the head, right? Some of these golf courses that host U.S. Opens, when we're talking Wingfoot or Shinnecock or Pebble Beach or wherever, there is a familiarity to it. It comes every 10 years or so, and you get to play it, and you can play it anyway. But to not ever have seen the course, to see it for the first time maybe 2 weeks ago or whatever it was when you could finally start going there on a regular basis, there's going to be a level of unfamiliarity to this. But it is also really, really challenging. The 290-yard par 3 that we've been talking about, the 11th hole, for example, is 50 feet downhill from the tee box. So you're not going to need to bomb a driver to get there. It's not an uphill 290 or a level 290. So you're going to have some guys being able to reach a 290-yard with a utility iron, maybe even a 4-wood or something along those lines. It's still a long way to go. Even if you're 50 feet down, it's still a long way to go. But that decline in elevation is going to take a lesser club to get there. But I love the fact that they have another par 3 that can be the 15th, which could be as short as 85 yards. Think how tricky that could be. You think these guys, especially on a small green with a tight pin where danger is kind of around it, I love the short hole idea. I think we are losing short golf holes in the makings of these tournaments. Get a good 110, very small green, heavily bunkered golf hole. Bring those kind of back, like you see at Troon, the postage stamp hole at Troon, or even the 7th at Pebble Beach, which most of the challenge on the 7th at Pebble Beach is wind, because it's right off the cliff. It's right by the ocean. So the wind plays a real heavy factor in how your wedge shot goes into the 7th. But wind isn't going to be that big of a deal at Los Angeles Country Club. It's not going to be like coming off the Pacific Ocean like you see at Pebble Beach, but it still could get pretty windy. But they don't expect it to be a big deal. But it's still going to be tricky enough with the greens and how small they are. So I'm really looking forward to it. But I do know that the PGA Tour and the LIV Golf Tour, that story is too big to have it kind of go away. I know once golf ball is struck on Thursday, no golfer is going to want to talk about it. No one's going to want to talk about it on after round on a Friday, right? Hey, you shot 67, you're tied for the lead, and what do you think about LIV? They're just going to go, I'm just going to talk about my 67. That's it. So, but I still think leading up to it, you know, today, you could still probably grab a few sound bites on what this means. Jay Monahan, PGA Tour commissioner, and now, I guess, CEO of World Golf, has stepped aside for medical reasons. I'm not going to say I didn't see this coming. Like, I didn't predict this, but it's not surprising. I mean, how many times have people gone through a very, 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 very stressful situation and ended up with health problems afterwards, right? I'm not surprised by this. He probably had not slept in weeks leading to the announcement and then afterwards. I can't imagine. Imagine if you're Jay Monahan and you're working on a deal that brings LIV and the PGA Tour together, and you know you're going to be torn to pieces when this is finally released. How much would you sleep? Like, how much could you relax with your family? He probably drove his family nuts. Right, just talking about it all the time and whatnot. Like, it is the biggest golf story in a long time. It might have been the biggest sports story of the year last year when LIV broke away. And to bring it together and to feel the ramifications of it, I have not been surprised one bit that he's stepping away. But it is the third major of the year. It's the national championship of golf. It is a prestigious honor to win the U.S. Open. It ranks very high among the four because of the national aspect of it, the national championship aspect of it. It is an incredible task because you have to play with rough that's as thick as your feet, you know, all the way up to your ankles. It is greens that are usually really slick. It's fairways that have kind of been pinched in a little bit, where accuracy is at all-time high, and par is a good golf score. So I think if the sixth hole at this golf course, for example, you'll probably hear about it a lot, where you could drive the green. We talked about it with Will Gray. If you're a golfer that knows that birdies and eagles are going to be really big at an open, driving that green, trying to get it close, maybe drain a putt if you can, could set you apart if you can land that, because you know bogeys are coming. So that's the key with the U.S. Open, is give in to the bogeys, because the bogeys are coming for everybody.
Just take them. I was watching video today of the slopes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you hit that thing just wrong, it's gone.
You know what I did yesterday? yesterday, I downloaded – I have a EA Sports PGA Tour. Bought that. The LA Country Club is now available on the course as a course download. I downloaded it, and I played it 3 times yesterday.
How many times did your ball roll off the green?
All the time. It's supposed to be one of them. It's supposed to be the most realistic golf game that is out there. And I played a lot of the old Tiger Woods games. Some of the physics are a little off, but this one they've developed over years and years to get the physics right. And yeah, it's nuts how you would hit and it would just hit the green.
Standing on the fairway and he just tossed the ball out in front of him. And then you see this ball hit, you know, and it kind of is going straight for a second. And all of a sudden, just made a left-hand turn at Albuquerque, rolled all the way down.
I know. It's like, going to be fun. Going to be fun. Starts Thursday. Good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up next, it's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, the good, the bad, and the dumb here on your Wednesday edition. Glad you could be with us on SportsMap Radio. We got you the good. We got your bad. We got your dumb. All right, let's get started with the good of the day.
Good of the day. Paul McCartney confirms that the Beatles are releasing one last song.
Ooh. Beatles release one last song. So it's just him and Ringo?
Here's where
do they have something in the tank?
Here's where a little bit of bad is, okay?
All right.
They're using AI technology for John Lennon's voice.
I don't think that's a good idea at all. Oh my
I'm curious because, you know, we've seen what AI technology, like the way they're able to mimic voices, and it sounds really good. So I am curious to listen to it. I just don't know. You know, AI scares me.
AI scares me too. This is not good. This is not a good story. I'm not liking this story. But it could be good that the Beatles release another song.
Maybe they have control over AI John Lennon. I don't know.
Quickly, is there a reason he's doing that? Did it say anything in the article?
No, that's a great question.
Because he obviously doesn't need the money. He obviously doesn't need the fame.
He's poor.
But he's art. Yeah, that's true. But it's art. Maybe he's an artist that wants to create and he hasn't created. I don't know. I mean, what do I know?
I think what it is, I mean, they have like music. I mean, you know, I mean, when bands get together, they just make music upon music upon music. Yeah. And they may not have the lyrics to go with that music. And maybe he finally found the right lyrics and... You know, yeah, I mean, just no word if they're using AI George Harrison.
There is, I know, right? There is something that's different. I mean, most people work, you know, they do a career and then they look forward to retirement. But when you're an artist, it never leaves you. You never go, oh, yeah, no, I made music for 40 years and I'm living off the royalties. That's it. Like, you want to continue to do it. Like, you get near a piano, you want to play. You want to write something. You want to write a book. You want to write poetry. You want to paint. Whatever it is you do as an artist, act in movies, whatever it is, there's a desire to want to continue to do that. So I don't blame him. Like, how old is he? God, 80-something years old?
At least.
Right? At least. So he probably still has it in him to... Create music, see what happens. But yeah, no, I don't like this AI thing. Can it, cause you know, that's just showing everybody that we can do this,
especially if it like comes off sounding really good.
Yeah,
like you can't tell if it's you know, today Beatles versus 1960s Beatles? I mean, I don't know.
See, you know what I'm worried about, man? I'm worried about, well, I guess I shouldn't be worried about it because it's coming. So let's say you were close to your mother. You know, your mother was awesome. She's a great mother. And she passes away. And somehow, some way, you can put in video. You can put in pictures.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
you can just dump it into an AI machine, and you could have a conversation with an AI mother. Not watching a video.
Right.
Like, literally, it would respond to you in a conversation, but it would look and sound exactly like your deceased mother.
Well,
like,
that
is one thing that I'm not looking forward to in the horizon.
You've seen the photos that move.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where, it's like, oh, here's my, my dead relative, and the photo moves and smiles at you. It just doesn't say anything, but it moves and mimics all the things. That freaks me out.
So I was watching this video over the weekend. I think it was about the new Apple VR headset that's coming out next year. It's the $3,500 headset.
Yeah, yep.
Totally expensive. But one thing it'll allow you to do is, let's say your kid is celebrating his first birthday. And you put on the goggles and you hit record, it's going to make a video of the thing. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal, right? But here's where it gets tricky. So it's going to film, you're going to film your kid's birthday party, right? Or whatever it is you're filming. Then when you rewatch it, instead of watching, because I was telling my wife this, she goes, well, isn't that just like watching a video? I'm like, no. When you put the headset on and push play, you're in the scene. You're going to watch it as if you are there again. This is going to be a new way. So instead of like sitting in a chair and calling up a video from your phone on a TV to watch you at your kid's birthday party, you're going to put the goggles on, and all around you is going to be where you were when you were filming this. What's behind you? What's on the side of you? So now you're immersed into the memory of your kid's first birthday party again. And I was like, that's going to be really weird.
Yeah.
That's going to be weird because I can watch a video of a memory, but I'm in the present. But I've never been in the video of a memory where I'm actually reliving the moment. That's going to be weird. And that's what I feel like is going to be the new norm going forward. Like, you might go to Disney World and everybody's wearing goggles to film the three-dimensional experience so that they can go, yeah, I want to go back to where I was, or any other visit the Roman Colosseum, or visit the pyramids in Egypt, or visit the Grand Canyon. You're just going to have these videos of people going, yep, I want to relive that again. I want to be in that moment again. Click, put the headphones on. And then what productive society are we going to have after that? We're not going to have very much. People are going to want to go into the nostalgic past all the time. So that being said, I'm looking forward to seeing what this is, but I'm a little nervous about it.
Exactly. That's how I am. I'm curious to hear how it sounds.
Philip on Twitter, by the way, the Beatles story reminds me of that Tom Brady AI stand-up comedy special. I'm curious but not excited about it. Oh, is that where Tom Brady is going to do stand-up comedy, but it's an AI Tom Brady?
Really?
Is that what that is, Philip? Because
I don't think that's quite the same there, Philip.
We're resurrecting John Lennon's voice in AI. Like, we're playing God here. Like, that's not, I don't know if that's going
to
work.
It's music John Lennon created and then had it sent to Paul shortly before his death. That Yoko Ono passed over the cassette shortly before, that he recorded shortly before his death. I think she passed over the recording after his death.
Oh, I gotcha.
But it was recorded shortly before his death. And
if you dump AI, if you dump every song John Lennon wrote and played in, where AI could isolate John Lennon's contribution, it could absolutely come up with a John Lennon song on its own. Right?
Not only that, but I mean, okay, real talk. Could a music that was created by John Lennon prior to his death, but lyrics that are AI generated, could that win a Grammy?
Good point. Is it John Lennon's property?
Yeah.
Is it his estate's property, any royalties that come from this? That's another question to ask. That's wild. This is a paradox in time travel, by the way. This is a known paradox in time travel, where they say, you invent a time machine, you take a copy of Romeo and Juliet back to Shakespeare. You give it to Shakespeare. He plagiarizes the book you gave him. Did he write Romeo and Juliet when you return? It's a time travel paradox. This is not quite the same, but it feels kind of the same.
I liked the one in Star Trek IV when they went back in time to save the whales.
They saved the whales.
And they're like, you know, he gave him the formula. When Scotty gave him the formula, he goes, how did we know he didn't invent it?
That's right. That's right. That's correct. So this is going to be an interesting situation.
It will be.
AI is creepy, man. Creepy. All right. Do we have time? We're running out of time.
No.
You want to start it and then continue it?
Well, I don't know. Because this is something that'll probably carry on for a little bit as well. Actually, all three of these today might be their own segment. I'm just going out on a limb right now, letting you know that I know you, and like this next one, which deals with college football or college athletics, I should say, will lead you down a path.
Okay, very good. All right. So
I don't know if you really. I think we should save it.
Well, let's talk about this real quick because Philip just got back to us on Twitter. He said you guys talked about the Brady thing and played a clip of it a while back. It just sounded weird. Did we?
Did we?
Was that us, Philip? Are you sure? Did we a Brady?
Are you two timing us, Philip?
A Brady AI thing? Did we do that?
I don't remember. Doing
my brain
Brady
is loaded with bits and clips, but maybe we did.
Yeah. I, you know, my wife.
Sure, you're not listening to your other favorite shows, Philip?
Exactly. My wife yesterday, I didn't remember something. She says, you might have dementia. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to go with that now.
No, why not?
So maybe I'll use dementia here as well. I don't remember playing a Brady thing. I know we've talked a lot of Brady, but did I play a Brady clip? I'm going to have to investigate that.
I was telling my wife this. My father-in-law is in his mid, I want to say 85, something like that. So he sits down and he'll tell you a story. And he used to be an umpire and a game official or something.
Yeah.
And he'll tell you a story and he'll go, I was once officiating a kid and he had a play where he had the ball in the corner. Then he passed it. Then he got the ball back. And I'm like, I don't remember what I had for dinner 2 days ago. How are you remembering what the kid's shoelaces were?
Okay, I agree with that.
How do people get like that? Where it's razor sharp.
But what part of the brain controls song lyrics?
Good question.
Because that's the one we need to tap into to expand. Because I don't know why, but an early 80s song can pop on. I know all the lyrics.
I know the lyrics too. Yeah, good point. Good point.
I don't know why. I'm like you, though. I can't remember what I had for dinner last night.
I tell my wife that every time they come to visit, I go, your dad has a razor-sharp memory. I mean, razor-sharp, the details that are still in his brain from 60 years ago.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. All right, we're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb. We just did the good. Anytime we get an AI conversation, it's just watch out.
It takes over a segment. And this one's a cautionary good. We said it was a cautionary good. I mean, I like the idea. I'm curious to hear an AI-generated John Lennon's and a new Beatles song.
You know what's going to happen? It's not going to be good or something, but then they're going to be like, man, don't worry about it. It'll get better.
But what if it is good?
What if it is good?
What if it just comes out and you're just like, oh my God. This is amazing. I mean, our lifetime, you and I have never had a new Beatles song drop.
That's right. That's right.
I don't think.
Well, would you buy an album of an AI generated Prince song? Michael Jackson songs or name your artist
that's the road we're heading, right?
And then who gets it? Like, who gets the rights? The people that created the AI program in the first place? The artist who you're mimicking?
Because you know someone out there right now is going, you know what we've never had a Michael Jackson Christmas album.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. We're going to do
what
that.
What if we have an AI-generated Michael Jackson Christmas album where he's singing Silent Night and Jingle Bells or Jingle Bell Rock? I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. All right, so what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that the SEC says it does have some interest in two, possibly three ACC teams.
I know. I saw this yesterday. I was like, here it comes. Oh, boy.
But Miami will never be one of them.
Yeah, no, they don't want Miami. No, they don't want Miami.
Apparently, Miami doesn't fit the culture of the SEC.
Right.
I don't think
Luther Campbell is still giving people money in Miami.
Yeah.
Like stop.
So this is according to college sports writer Jim Williams, who's been updating fans on this. He said that, you know, for the SEC, there is one Florida team and will always only be one Florida team. Although they could see Florida State. There is some interest in just that school. No others, though.
Yeah, they've been talking about Florida State for a while, but there was always – Florida State was always like – this was in the good old days of Florida State,
yeah,
by the way, when they used to be like, why? We're rolling through the ACC all the time. Why would we do that?
But the other two ACC schools are definitely interested in Clemson. Why not?
You know what's really funny is that 30 for 30 did not one, but two documentaries on Miami football.
Yes.
The U Part 1 and the U Part 2. So if there is a program that has a history of notoriety, whether positively or negatively, it's the University of Miami.
Well, apparently, you know, sources within the SEC are saying, you know, Miami's a better fit for the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, is that okay? Is that a dig? Is that a dig?
Good Lord. Seriously, like what? Name me any conference other than the SEC that would have the cojones to say we don't want the city of Miami,
right,
as part of our landscape.
We don't need South Florida.
Yeah, we don't need South Florida at all. Like, Florida State, other conference would say that.
Florida State's in Tallahassee, right?
Uh huh.
Or outside of Tallahassee.
Yep, it is Tallahassee.
And Florida's in Jacksonville, so they got the northern part of
Florida's
the state.
Florida's in Gainesville. Part of Jacksonville. Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's the northern part of the state. Can they not be bothered by
That's
the southern
right.
part of Florida?
Like, exactly.
That doesn't exist to the SEC. They don't need it.
What did Howard Schellenberger say back in the early 80s? Put a wall around the state of Miami. That's what his goal was. He's like, tired of Florida and all these schools poaching good players from South Florida. Put a wall around the state of Miami. That's what they did. So again, only a conference that is so confident in its own existence would say, we don't even need that entire region.
Interested.
Don't worry about it. It's almost like Alexander the Great conquering the world and going, that area over there, why bother? Like, just leave them alone. Let them do what they want. I want everything else. Like, the SEC is like, we'll take everything else, but not that.
Yeah, if he decided that, you know, the area around the Mediterranean Sea.
Right.
Not that big of a deal. Yeah, not that important.
Just leave it alone. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't need
it. Don't put any resources into that. Seriously. By the way, they just announced that everybody in the SEC is going to play Texas or Oklahoma once in it. You're either getting Texas or Oklahoma on your 2024 schedule. So they told all the other teams that's how it's going to be. There's 14 teams outside of those two. So Texas and Oklahoma are going to get everybody's playing them. And everyone's like, well, yeah. Well, you know, create two divisions, Texas and Oklahoma. Like, when you bring somebody new in, if I'm a school, I definitely want to be. I want to see them at some point. Who wouldn't play Texas and Oklahoma in 2024? Right?
No, I think you need to
fill it. Yeah. What they're saying is, hey, Tennessee, like we were talking about last time, don't start thinking you have seven rivalries you have to protect.
Yeah.
You're getting Texas or Oklahoma.
Well,
so somebody's going bye-bye.
It's like it's what you're saying. Like, Texas A&M isn't going to play Oklahoma.
Right.
Because I think that first year, maybe the second year, I don't know if that's going to be a mainstay rivalry, or maybe it is, and they'll figure it out. But that first year, they're going to probably say, no, you're just going to play Texas. Don't worry about Oklahoma.
Yeah, you're not playing Oklahoma.
We'll get you against Oklahoma eventually. But that first year, we definitely need you playing against Texas.
Exactly. And the way it's going to work is this, right? So, there's 14 teams divided by these two schools. Each school is going to get seven. You play eight conference games, and then they're going to play each other.
Did they realign the East and West? I mean,
they're dumping those.
They're just going one solid thing.
Yeah, and that's going to create these issues where you have these deep traditional rivalries where you're wondering if they're going to be taken off the board. Because they used to be divisional games you could count on, and now you may not be able to count on them anymore. And so in the Tennessee example I gave where my friend was like, Kentucky and Georgia and Florida and Vanderbilt, you can do that with almost any other school. Like, every school feels like its division rivals are important. You go to LSU, their game against Ole Miss is for the boot, and their game against Mississippi State is for this, and their game against Auburn means this, and their game against Alabama means this. And you've created over years and years and years these sort of rivalries within the context of the conference, not like an in-state rivalry, but just we play all the time. We've been playing it all the time for decades, and they're trying to be like, you got to move away from that now. Like there's some will protect, but you're going to have to – you can't count on playing everybody you used to play in the old days. That's not how this is going to work.
What if they brought in two more schools? What if they did bring in Clemson? The SEC was interested in Clemson. They also said that, you know, they can make a decent argument for North Carolina. And that's where I said, I don't think that's football. I think that's basketball related.
Yeah.
You know, SEC basketball and North Carolina Tar Heels, that would be huge.
Yeah, right.
But what if, you know, you do bring that in there, and then all of a sudden you're looking at it like, all right, well, in football, you know, you got Clemson, you got North Carolina. How do you fit those guys in now?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I...
And then do we lose North Carolina versus Duke over time, like we did Texas and Texas A&M because North Carolina left?
It's
kind of sad.
It is going to be kind of sad. It's bigger, but it's not better. I remember when Jim Boeheim talked about this, right? Jim Boeheim was in the documentary about the Big East, Requiem for the Big East.
Yeah.
He actually just flat out said, hey, you know what? It was great, but today it's different today. He was kind of supporting, like, we're in the ACC now. That's just the way it is. And that's the way in the documentary is like, those are the good old days, but these are the new days. And you're going to have people that are going to say that. You're going to have people saying, look, for the betterment of this, we're increasing revenue. The schools are getting more money, et cetera. But you are talking about an area of the country that's deep in traditions that they want to keep. And now you're asking those fan bases to sort of say that you're going to be adding more teams. And when you add more teams, you know what? Some things are disappearing, and of course they'll go with it because it's college football. What else are they going to do? But there is going to be a moment where you go, it kind of stinks. There's some I don't really want to get rid of, but I don't know, man. Like it's not about comfortability, but I am like, how much of the conference realignment are we in the baby steps, or are we almost done?
Yeah. Are we? I mean, I don't think we're almost done. And it could.
I don't either.
It could just be an off-season thing. Like, there's not a lot of off-season to talk about, so maybe we speculate a few things, a few more things.
Yeah.
But I mean, with, you know, ACC expanding, bringing in Texas, Oklahoma, Big Ten counter that with UCLA, USC. Pac-12 is going to be demolished in just a few, because, I mean... Well, there's no TV rights deal. I mean, that's going to expire, and they have nothing.
That's the question schools have to ask themselves, right? I'm in Oregon, right? I know people are going to want me. Okay, fine. Yeah. But if I'm Cal, do I have the attractiveness like USC and UCLA? Do I have the attractiveness of Texas, Oklahoma? Because those schools, they know they'll be wanted. If they show dissatisfaction with the conference that they're in, they know that there's going to be people plucking them because they're Oklahoma, they're Texas, they're USC, they're UCLA. Oregon's in that category, right? Some other schools are in that category. But if I'm Washington State, do I go, does anybody want me? Like, would anybody bend over backwards to get me to join their conference? Or am I going to have to play in the scrap heap of a conference that's barely being putting together a survivability, because I'm in Pullman and I'm not exactly Seattle or Phoenix or other places in the Pac-12.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we are continuing this good, the bad, and the dumb. Get used to it, folks, now that the Stanley Cup and the NBA Finals are done. that's a sports radio meaning, yeah, we're in the dead period, but we are going to still rock and roll all the way to football season. By the way, reminder that we get rolling with our NFL previews 8 weeks before kickoff.
Yes.
We do a division a week. And so how it works, if you're new to the show, if you've been listening for a while, or whether you're brand new to the show, so we kind of take the calendar and we go with the kickoff week, and then we go back 8 weeks, and then we do a division every single week. So we'll, and then we, what we do is we do a team a day up until what, Friday, and then Friday we usually do a preview of it. Now, if we run into problems, we've given ourselves a day, a buffer, right?
Well, like, you know, we did run into an issue last year, and that was, you know, we were trying to get the Detroit Lions.
That's right.
And it just happened to be that that was the day, like, all the training camps opened up.
And so like, they couldn't join us. Yeah.
The first media availability. And the problem that we have with our show is that it happens to be during media availability.
I know. So that's going to be challenging like for us. This is our first NFL go-around in the new time slot.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like if we had an afternoon show, not a problem.
Not a problem. Yeah.
No, it'd just say, you'd be like, hey, you want to jump on? Sure. No, yeah, I'm not doing anything.
So we
practice is over.
Yeah, so we'll do that where we might go, oh, we got to move that. So we'll move it. We'll do the best we can. But usually
can't
we
get
try
that
to,
coach on. Come on.
Yeah, we'll get that. We usually try to get things wrapped up in a week. So you again, it's a great. It's one of my favorite times of year because it's always neat to do previews because everybody's optimistic, unless you're a certain team that may just be knowing you're terrible. But it's going to be really fun.
No, just, you know what it reminds me of?
Different teams that are in contention.
At the beginning of any sports season, I'm always reminded of that one scene in, God, what was the movie called? Fever Pitch.
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but there's one scene that sticks out in my head the most, and that's when Jimmy Fallon got the season tickets. Then he had and he had all his buddies over, and because he had two tickets to Fenway Park. And I get, they were like really good seats, and he had his buddies over to determine who gets to go with him to what game. But they get the season tickets in FedEx boxes, and they all open up, and they're all smelling it. And that's that's all I remember. You know, I really remember that scene. It's like, you know what? That's probably the truest, realest thing in, any sports fan has.
Oh.
You get those season tickets, and you're smelling the tickets going, this is the season.
My wife asked me years ago one time, because I was doing research on a preseason team, and I was looking up through my laptop. And she looked at me one. This was years and years ago. She goes, "What would you do if they outlawed football?" And I'd go, "Learn to code." And she goes, "What?" I go, "I wouldn't be doing this." I said, "If somehow some authority came down and said no more football, college, pro, done. Every other sport, you're here, but NFL football and college football against the law, punishable
CTE,
by death.
CTE is now a pandemic."
Yeah, I said, "If that hypothetical came true." I'd be learning to code. I'd be doing something complete. I'd be web design. I'd be whatever.
I'd
be a police officer.
I got a better one for you, Tony. I'd move to England.
I might. Yeah, I might move.
We're packing our bags. You know, I'm going to get into the other football.
Exactly. So yeah, because she sees a change in the household when football season comes. She just sees me. Magazines get picked up at the supermarket that don't get picked up during the regular season.
When I lived in Hawaii, right, during the summer months, Hawaiians on the island, natives or people who grew up there or live there year round, they're kind of depressed because two things are happening, especially if you're on the North Shore of any of the islands of Hawaii. Two things are happening. One, there's an abundance of local visitors that are just ruin everything. And then the other one is that there's no waves.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the northern swells start coming in, which is all the really good waves, there is a euphoria on the island. I mean, people are just giddy. They're happy. They're talkative. They're relaxed. They're enjoying life once more because, they're waking from their dormant, non-surfing slumber.
Sure. That's the way. Yeah. You get that feeling again. It's like hunting season for people.
Yeah, hunting season.
Like,
everyone has it.
Everybody has it. So,
but
sorry, let's get to the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day is that the Oakland A's fans held a reverse boycott for the game last night.
I saw this and was kind of,
And they packed the stands, and they actually, out of it's about a 50,000-seat Coliseum, they packed it with just about over 27,000 people.
Yeah.
And, the whole reason for this was to express that they are not the problem. That it's the ownership that is the issue with the Oakland A's.
Now, I do not understand that.
I don't either.
And the reason I don't is because the A's have been very honest. They actually made a Hollywood movie about this on their philosophy.
Yeah.
This is how they do it. If you don't like it, right, that's, as a fan, that's on you, but at the they're not hiding it from you. They are bad, then they make the playoffs, then they're bad again, then they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Then they're bad again. They were just in the playoffs not that long ago.
No, and it's not our fault that we don't know who's on the team.
That's right.
Because
this is
how
they want to do business.
They don't go after the big name guys. They go after, you know, it's that money ball mentality, which is like, you know, like we see in the movie. I just need guys to get on base. I don't care if they hit home runs. I don't care if they're, you know, faces of the league. I just need guys to get on base.
I made this point to a Vegas guy who said, why would we want the A's? We can do better. I'm like, what do you mean do better? They make the playoffs. They've made the playoffs like six times in the last 14 years.
Right.
That's not bad. And by the way, teams that are making the playoffs consistently today, none of them are moving.
No.
You're not getting the Astros. What do you think you're getting? What do you think the Dodgers are going to pick up and move to Vegas? What are you talking about? Like, what do you mean you could do better? Expansion team? Good luck. They're not expanding yet.
I don't get.
You want to wait another 10 years?
And I didn't get the reverse boycott idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's for one game. You pack the stadium. You know, the stadium was 59% full. Okay, so, I mean, it's not a sellout. And so I'm trying to rational this, like, okay, you're doing a reverse boycott by showing up to the game.
Yeah.
What does that prove?
The owner's like, I wanted you to show up all along.
Yeah, and you never did.
And you never did. And then the moment I'm going to move the team, now you're like, this is worthless. And by the way, sell the team.
Yep.
Like, he's going to sell a baseball team because Joe Smith said he should.
Well, it wasn't only that, too, Tony. I mean, they were chanting sell the team throughout the game, but then towards the end of the game, they were just throwing trash on the field.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's beyond me to, like, try to comprehend. Like, at that point, I'm like, God, I got to get out of Vegas.
It's,
the only problem is that he's running into little snags here and there with trying to get a stadium up in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just delay tactics.
Okay,
I think
so
it'll happen.
If it doesn't happen in Vegas, which people think it's going to anyway, but if it doesn't and he can't go there, maybe I would go, all right, I'm going to get out of this. This is ridiculous.
Then I
will sell the team, and you can do whatever you want with it. But if he feels like he can move to Vegas, no matter what these fans are saying, why would he go, why would I sell a team that's about ready to move to a brand new city in a state-of-the-art stadium on the Strip?
Right.
They want to put it where the Tropicana Hotel Casino, at least one proposal,
yeah,
there's a bunch of them, but there's one proposal that says they're going to tear down the Tropicana, which is an old, you know, it's a casino that probably deserves to be brought down anyway.
Yep.
And build it there.
Put to rest.
on the strip, a baseball stadium on the Strip, and you want me to get rid of it because you didn't like the fact that I'm playing in this dump of a Coliseum? And nobody wants to come here?
Yeah, here,
no, thank you.
Guys, I'm going to let you on a little inside, not a secret, but an inside knowledge of the Coliseum, right? On Sundays during the NFL, we usually get stringers to pop on some of our various shows.
Right.
You know, people just reporting live from the game, reporting on things that maybe you're not seeing on camera. You know, maybe hearing stories and whispers and stuff like that that, you know, aren't being made to the public. And that's why we bring these stringers on. The Coliseum is one of the worst places we've ever encountered because we can't, and you know, after the game, and I know you've done this a lot, Tony, is after the game, you know, a lot of times you get post-game interviews.
Yeah.
You can't do a post-game interview from the locker room at the Coliseum because it's a bunker.
Yeah.
There's no cell signal coming out of there. So
yeah,
we've never been able to get like a post-game guest from the Raiders or from whoever the Raiders were playing during that time because the cell signal couldn't escape. You had to catch them hopefully like in the tunnel or getting into the car or something.
It is totally.
It's a dump.
It's a dump. It's a total dump. And good luck, Oakland,
without a baseball team
and a football
team. Reverse boycott. You increased your attendance by what, 1,000%?
Yeah,
for one
well
night?
Well done. Well done. All right, hour three coming up next. We continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.